hope some hands go up. How many people here have ever asked a research study or a large data survey to collect sexual orientation data? The people that said that they were working with data, how many of them have data sets that actually have sexual orientation data? Wow, great. What I'm going to be talking about today is trying to get people to collect sexual orientation data. And I wanted that information because I thought, I don't know if everyone sitting out there even knows what I'm talking about and knows the importance. So hopefully, with all those hands up, everyone here already understands the importance of collecting sexual orientation data. For those of you, a few of you that didn't have your hands up, data is power. Without data, you don't have visibility. And you can trace with, you know, a lot of large federal data sets and small state data sets and community-based organization data sets, the actual creation of programs and policies once they've started collecting sexual orientation data. A good example is the youth risk behavior surveys. Interestingly, almost every state that has added a variable to collect sexual orientation data has found in the data that the kids that identify as gay, lesbian, or bisexual are more likely to, and I know probably a lot of people here have worked with YRBS data, they found that the kids are more likely to, almost every one of the causes of morbidity and mortality, use the different drugs, HIV risk behaviors, the girls identify as lesbian are more likely to get pregnant, et cetera, et cetera. And what's happened is every one of those states then has had to respond. And many of them, if not all now, have created safe schools programs as a response to that data. Massachusetts, for example, credits their YRBS with the information that they needed to actually create the Safe Schools program. So data is power. I just had an alternative title, a few things I've learned while trying to get the federal government, but also state governments and community-based organizations and researchers to collect sexual orientation data. And from the looks of this audience, I'm sure a lot of you have similar experiences and can talk about the same things. I just wanted to start really quick with an introduction about what is demography. When I talk about collecting sexual orientation data, I include sexual orientation as a demographic variable. How many people have taken a demography class? It's like, wow, two people. Wow, that's more than usual. But, you know, most of us that go out and start collecting sexual orientation data and demographic data hardly even know what demography is. We say, oh, those are demographic variables, and we don't really know much more about it. But just a quick introduction, demography is the scientific study of the human population, including its size, distribution, composition, and factors that determine changes in its size, distribution, and composition. This next slide just says the same thing. If you just take that definition, and I'm big on taking definitions and breaking them down, but if you just look at what demography is, it's looking at the size, how many people there are, the distribution, where they are, the composition, which is what I'll come back, I have another slide on, and then the changes in those three things. So composition, and this is just looking traditionally, there's core demographic variables if you look at any demographic text, and that's age, year of birth, nativity, sex, and race are considered the core demographic variables that you would want to collect. There's other variables that are considered important and often collected as well. Ethnicity, religion, citizenship, marital status, educational level, labor force status, income and wealth. And to that, and what I've been trying to do for the last 20 years, is to get people to add sexual orientation, include that as a demographic variable as well when looking at population compositions. So why do we collect demographic data in general, not just sexual orientation, but demographic data in general? This actually comes from a report that Donna Shalala put out for Health and Human Services back in, I think it was 1999. She said it's important to collect demographic information in all federal government surveys from HHS for these four reasons: civil rights enforcement, program administration and evaluation, research, and public health surveillance. And so a lot of what I've been doing is focused on public health surveillance, but I think, you know, as time has gone on, it's expanded to the other areas as well. And so what I wanted to talk about today, and I have a little less than 15 minutes to do is these 8 questions. The questions that I get asked when I go to someone and I say you should put a sexual orientation variable in your research study. I get asked, is the variable relevant to the study? Good question. And I'll go through each of these in a little more detail, or most of these in a little more detail in a bit. How much will it cost to collect? I mean, adding something takes more time and resources. Will subjects refuse to answer questions or break off interviews? Everyone thinks if you ask a sexual orientation question, people are going to, like, throw you out of their house or run for the exits. Could findings be used to stigmatize populations? This is a question that actually often comes more from within the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender communities than from outside. Will there be enough power to analyze the data? Will enough people identify in these categories that we can actually then make associations with the other variables? Is the variable proxy for more relevant variables? Do we really need to be measuring sexual orientation? Isn't it sexual behavior that you're really interested in? Shouldn't we be measuring that? Are there political ramifications of collecting this data? And 8, are there valid and reliable measures of the variable? And I've highlighted that because I started this, when I started this, I thought if we had a good measure, people would just put it in their surveys. We've heard from some students today, when I was a student, that's what I did. I did my dissertation on creating a measure, and I thought once I have a measure, people will put it, everyone will start collecting this data. And what I found is you have to answer these other questions, and these other questions are sometimes much more important than actually having a good, valid, and reliable measure to put into surveys. And I don't have time to go through every one of these in tremendous detail, but I just wondered if there were questions, if any of these popped up. Has anyone had any of these questions asked of them? Heather, which questions come up? That's the one I get the most. The refuse and then power is usually second. But other people.
The fourth question was in the other way of thinking about, you know, certainly the fourth kind of question, and then how to be the fourth one to use. Like I went to the petition to the refuse system, why are these doing it? After the public, we really need the population system to determine if any of the top people who live to the population system, you know, fall negative comments to the system. Which, I mean, I think really begs the either form.
Right. Absolutely. I was a co-author on that study, by the way, that you're mentioning. But yes, I agree 100%. And just anyone else, if someone else wants to. Excellent. And so I'm glad to hear that other people are getting these questions. What I'm going to do is, there won't be time to go through them all, but I'll focus on some of the ones that we heard here. I'm going the wrong way. Let's see. There. Is the variable relevant to this study? I think I will address that one because I think that's one of the most important. I mean, and I think this is something, if you go to someone and you say you should be putting this variable on your survey, like if you go to the National Health Interview Survey, it's one of the most important surveys conducted in the federal government that still does not collect sexual orientation data. It's used to monitor close to 100 Healthy People 2010 objectives, and it's a survey that collects information on over 40,000 individuals every year. It's ongoing, conducted by the census. It's like something that really should have a sexual orientation variable. You can't go to them and say, these are scientists that are running the survey. You can't go to them and say, you just need to put this on. What you have to do is you have to say, well, your survey has variables on tobacco use, and et cetera. And you go through and you have to explain, we know in the community, in the lesbian gay community, from other surveys now, from the youth risk behavior surveys, et cetera, that people that identify as gay, lesbian, or bisexual are more likely to smoke. So you have to be able to make the scientific argument to scientists. I find that a lot of people go in as advocates, saying that this is just the right thing to do. And you have to realize who you're talking to. And the scientists often get turned off by that. One of the problems, though, with these people like the National Health Interview Survey is they think the only place that can actually show this is my data. My data set's the only one that really gets at tobacco use, and they don't trust any other survey on tobacco use. So you have this thing. They won't put it in until it's proven in their data, and their data is not in there, so you can't prove it. The opposite of a catch-22, and you know, on the other side, I think what's frustrating is HHS now requires the collection of race and ethnicity data everywhere. Even if there's no reason to believe it should be collected, that you don't think there's going to be any differences, and even if that data is never analyzed. And those of you that are survey researchers know there's an ethical reason. Anytime you ask someone a question and you collect data, that you actually have the intent to use that. So I think it's interesting that this has happened. And I just asked, do you consider the relevancy of every demographic variable before you actually put it in? I'll go through this one quickly because no one brought it up. But, you know, every question you put on a survey, there's a cost to it. Recently, the National Health Interview Survey told me it would be $2.6 million to put a sexual orientation variable on, and they wanted me to come up with the $2.6 million. I pretended I could. Is there anyone from the National Health Interview Survey here? No one? No one? Yeah, I pretended I could for a while. Just to see what they would, because they said it's going to be a lot of money. And I said, well, I might be able to get it. How much? Because I wanted to see what they said. And they actually put together a proposal and a budget and gave it to me. But, I think there's a more important question, and that's just that there's an opportunity cost. All of you that are researchers know every survey is already at its limit. And the limit is the time that you can take with someone on the phone or in their house. If you add a question, you have to take one off. If you're lucky, you'll be lucky to get one sexual orientation variable on. You can't say, oh, we have five questions we need to address sexual orientation. You're going to get one. By putting that one on, something else disappears from that survey. The biggie, will subjects refuse to answer questions or will they break off interviews? A major concern. Everyone thinks that people are just, they're going to be furious that you were asked this question, And Heather's nodding her head. I mean, other people are nodding their head. I mean, have you ever had trouble asking this question? No, I mean, it's like you don't have trouble. The vast majority of the population is heterosexual and really doesn't mind telling you. I mean, I won't say that we've never had problems, but we don't have problems where people break off and throw you out of their house. They may ask you, why are you asking this question, and they may refuse, but the refusal tends to be very low, and I'll give you some numbers on that. But just on sensitivity in general, in 2002, the 16.5% of National Health Interview Survey respondents broke off interviews. Of these, 17.9% did so because the questions were too personal. So that's about 3% of the people where they go into the house and they start asking questions break off because they feel it's too personal. Respondents are more likely to refuse or break off on income questions than virtually any other question. The National Health Interview Survey, 31% refused income on the 2002 NHIS. And if you're ever using that data, I mean, it's really, they actually send you a data set and there's a income data for everyone. There's a little asterisk. You have to be careful. It's actually imputed. They actually look at different characteristics of the individuals and actually put income variables in for the people. But if you go to them and you say, well, look, 31%, maybe you should take income. If you're concerned about refusals, maybe you should take income off of your survey. And they're horrified. It's like, no way. I mean, they would never take income off. But, I keep going backwards, NESARC, the National Epidemiological Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions, in the first 30,000 interviews, had zero people break off. I mean, say, leave, and these were done in the homes, say, leave my home, where they stopped the interview out of 30,000 individuals, and only 1.7% skipped the question. So compare that to income. And, you know, I just say, do you consider item refusal and breakoff before including a variable? And I think it's one of these interesting things. It comes up with sexual orientation, but it doesn't come up with other variables. People just put income in, and they don't ask you that question. That many percent of people will skip gender, but you don't, you know, you don't question this. So, three, could findings be used to stigmatize populations? Because that came up, you know, I'll address some of this. It's, you know, for centuries, and these, I have several quotes from different places, but for two centuries there have been scientists obsessed with proving that minorities, poor people, foreigners, and women are innately inferior to upper-class white males of Northern European extraction. And these data sets, including the Uterus Behavior Survey and the one that I worked on yesterday, the gentleman was talking about, are often just show all the things going wrong. And the Uterus Behavior Surveys are one where you're really tempted to do that, where it's every cause of morbidity and mortality in the survey. If you have enough power, you'll find some association with sexual orientation. And that presents one side that can be and is used by people to say that you should cure homosexuality, etc. Interestingly, you know, I think you can find this on the net if anyone's interested, but the current population survey debated the addition of nativity, that's where you were born, to its data set because of concerns that the data could be used or abused. So there's other people that are concerned with this. This is just a collection that I've put together of things that have been used to try to cure sexual orientation. You can read through them, music therapy, vegetotherapy, etc. And this data could certainly be used for that. I'm on question four, and there's 2 minutes. So I knew I couldn't get through all this, and I apologize. Let's see about this. And one of the big concerns is often data is released for public uses and can be used by anyone. And now, with the internet, a lot of these data sets are free to download. And for those of you that are data geeks, I should have mentioned when I had the NESARC data set up there, I just got an email yesterday from Bridget Grant, who manages it at NIAAA, and she said it's going to be up just before the holidays. So there's going to be about 40,000 individuals. All of them have been asked sexual orientation three different ways, and the data is going to be available for free with the sexual orientation variables just before the holidays. So there you go. Happy holidays. And will there be enough power? And let's just see if I want to skip through. I mean, power is a big one. Is that the one I want to end on? Yeah. Let me just spend a little time. I finish with this one. There's a lot of concern with power, and there are a lot of reasons. There are a lot of surveys that perhaps you're not going to get enough individuals. This is the first 30,000 people that responded to NESARC, only 1.7% identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. They have an attraction question. Only 5.1% said they were attracted to the same sex. With a sample size of 30,000, that's fine. I mean, you're going to be able to do some analysis. If you had a smaller sample, this could be a serious concern. But there are solutions. There's solutions of oversampling that you can use to address these concerns, and my time, I'm sure, is up. So I'm going to stop there.